Switch it in! The U.S. go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Lloyd will try a long hit! What a goal from Lloyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity! Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right. Thank you, Spencer, for that wonderful intro. We appreciate that and all your hard work and making us look good here. All right. We're on the air. Yes, the world-renowned Soccer Matters at ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. The world-renowned producers in studio tonight, Guillermo. The world-renowned listeners, who are you? 3, 2, 1, here we go. Let's have a great show tonight here. All right, I want to first off do a shout-out to Marcus Phil, a Trinidad and Tobago ex-player, played professionally, coach, fully inundated in the game. He's been spreading the word about the show down in Florida and letting people know about it, and we found out in we've kind of reached out to each other. He knows a number of the same people that I know from Trinidad and Tobago, amongst other pros. Sent me a list of guys that he's been kind of turning onto the show, and there's some very good names there, ex-MLS players. So thank you, Marcus, and hello to all the Soca Warrior friends. All right, thank you for tuning in. Streaming at ESPN975.com. You can listen to this show anywhere. We take your calls tonight, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. 22 years on the radio talking soccer. Soccer Matters has proven out its name. Originally, I named the show that because of simply the effect it had on so many people around the world. Now, think about this. This is back in like 2002. And the advancement of MLS, the sport, it's grown exponentially. The emotion it brings, another reason why I use Soccer Matters, because that emotion captures almost every corner of the globe. It's been a lifestyle. It's been a career for me, a pure joy. And I got a lot of people to thank for that. So make no mistake, this is a lot of fun. I love this. And a shout out to everybody who called in last week giving their take on Tuesday night to the question of the week, which I'm putting out again tonight. And we're going to continue to do this and get testimony from different people. What does the World Cup coming to Houston mean to you? 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. What does the World Cup mean to you? All right, here's something I got today from Joel.
It means a lot. One, it will be the first time I'll be able to personally see a World Cup match. But also, more importantly for me is for my son, for my 12-year-old son to be able to watch these games live, to use it as a developmental tool, but also for him to understand what it means to be in a World Cup, to see your own country, to see the passion of other fans and cultures around the stadium. But most importantly is the memories that we'll have forever to be at NRG. And those are memories that I think will stick not only for me, but for my son and the rest of my family forever.
I like that take. It's connecting it to youth. It's connecting it to the simple fact of never having been to a World Cup game. That's a big box to check. And to imagine that it's right in your own backyard, right? You can drive in from Pasadena. You can come in from Katy. You can come in from the east side of downtown. Some of the people over there can actually walk to the game that live near the stadium. I mean, the incredible thoughts of all the different combinations of things that this will bring from a soccer perspective. Yes, we know it's going to be like 7 Super Bowls. We're going to have people from all over the world. A ton of money is going to come into our market. Those are all beautiful things. But I'm leaning more towards your take from the soccer perspective of it. So take stock in what the sport means to you. Connect it to the World Cup. 713-780. What does the World Cup coming to Houston mean to you? Guillermo, what does it mean to you?
So you've asked me this question before, and I narrowed it down to one word: opportunity. An opportunity of an absolute lifetime. An opportunity as a fan, as somebody that works in the industry, as somebody that just wants to experience something that they've dreamed of as a little kid. What an opportunity this is for me, for you, for everybody in the city of Houston.
100%. That's a great, quick, sharp take, right to the point, and that drills it down. All right. So again, call in tonight. Give us your take. 713-780-3776. The responses have been great. I love the way people are connecting it to the grassroots. Every single show up until the World Cup now, I'm going to be taking testimony from all kinds of people. Ex-pros. By the way, if you want your testimony on the air, somehow send it to me on ESPN 97.5, or I guess they could find me on social media, right? But all we need is 30 or 40 seconds, no more. Something right to the point, what it means to you. Send us, and we may lead the show off with your soundbite on why Houston getting the World Cup is so important and what it means to you. Anywhere else we could have them go, Guillermo?
For sure, Twitter. If you're going to be sending something, send it through Twitter. Tweet at us, tag us, and so we can see it. And then maybe you get a lucky chance to be on the show.
All right, here we go. Blue card. Are you kidding me? The blue card. And by the way, take notice of the music when we go to break tonight, because there is a little reference to the new blue card, which debuted and it has debuted in Wales. It's going to debut in the late summer in trials. Now, this would be an additional card to a yellow and a red. The blue card, you go off for 10 minutes. Your team plays down 10 men. You get a blue card with dissent towards officials, cynical fouls, which, again, is going to be very subjective, right? Cynical fouls, we see it every weekend. Some people say, oh, that's not a foul. Oh, my God, that's a horrible foul. That's stop threatening attacks. Cynical fouls that stop threatening attacks. Are you in favor of the blue card? 713-780-3776. You know, my first thought about this, and I'm still digesting it, so I haven't come to a final conclusion. My first thought about this, is this for better managing the game? Is this for the competitive spirit of the game and within the laws of the game? Guess it could be. Or is this for entertainment? Because let me tell you, an entertainment value is going to come with a blue card. People are going to go nuts. Coaches are going to go nuts. And in fact, you're going to be creating even more dissent. You will definitely have games changing, right? Somebody goes off for 10 minutes and teams trying to close the game out by being aggressive and pressing. Well, maybe all of a sudden they're going to drop into a low block, right? And defend deeper. So a lot of things could change here in 10 minutes. And it could lead to more entertainment. Nobody's going to know. It probably will in some cases. But is this too much? Now, it's going to be trialed in the summer. I think it's been trialed already in Wales. Do we want this? Do you want the blue card? Do you want more pressure on referees? Can we not deal with it with the yellow and red card? It's going to be more stoppage of play. I would imagine it's not going to be used very often. But is this too much? I mean, what's next? We go to two additional goals on the field, one on each sideline? So now we play with four goals? You got to take on this, Guillermo? Go for it.
So trying to be devil's advocate, you could say that my thought process was this blue card could replace that late game second yellow that shouldn't be a red. Maybe it could be a replacement for that. That was my first thought when I saw about this.
So just use a yellow and a red. Why do we need a third card? I mean, I think it puts more pressure on referees, potentially more stoppage of play. Remember, VAR was supposed to be used conservatively for big moments. Got a little out of hand. I think it's now been pulled back to the middle. There were times where it was just ridiculously over the top. And it totally killed the essence of why we love football and soccer, which is free-flowing, decision-making, a player's game. And the more and more of this stuff, it scares me. Now, here's the Italian referee, Pierluigi Collina. He's in on this. He says it's worked very well at the grassroots level. Well, I'd like to know what age they're doing that with, because if they're doing it with 12 and 14-year-olds, it's a little different with full-blown, hardened pros who are playing for big money. Yeah, they're not pros then. I don't know what the age group was, so I'm kind of maybe going ahead there. Pros are going to lobby in politic. Little kids aren't. Here's another add-on that, frankly, I don't think is needed. It can make things very nebulous. It will still be subjective, by the way, and it will lead to controversy. And don't we have enough already with VAR? I might add that committees, all around the world, we have refereeing committees, all these great former referees like Colina, who was exceptional. And, you know, they're probably pushing for certain things, right? It's no different than politics. And that might be part of their job, that they got to push for things and change things to validate jobs and existence. Same thing might be said for data and analysis. I mean, there's no doubt data and analysis goes over the top. It does. It's still very useful. Don't get me wrong. People should still have jobs. But it's all balance. I just hope we're not sucking the essence out of football, which is the beautiful, free-flowing play. And you know what? Somebody out there might say, you're outdated, you're older, this is an old take. I don't think so. I think you have to preserve as well as advance. There's no question. But this is a big one. What's next? Two additional goals on the field? I mean, where do we go? All right, 713-780-3776. I want to get into Lindsey Horan, the article in The Athletic. Let me just say this. This was healthy. This was a love letter from Lindsey Horan to the sport of soccer, to the game, to the want to return to the game for the U.S. women's national team to be priority. It's not careless, as some are saying. Okay, maybe she shouldn't have used a word or two that made her statement a little bit more inflammatory. And they took that one sentence and it got totally misconstrued because it's out of context. I'm going to put it in context for you tonight, if you're listening to me. It's not careless. In fact, the overseas writers that have done takes on this and pulled her sound, they're missing it. She's pointing out the truth. And we don't often get that now. And that's why I think she's a leader. That's why she's got the qualities of a captain. She wants the U.S. women's national team to move back towards soccer and football and competition being the priority. Because we all know, and I don't care where you lie on this, deep down in your heart, you know this last version of the women's national team at the World Cup, this was not priority. Soccer was not priority, and it got kidnapped by a couple of players and politics. And it was sad, and it made me sad. And it also lost them followers that they need to earn back now. Now, Emma Hayes is a hire. She's a no-nonsense football person. This is a good hire. I think this is going to be great. And with Lindsey Horan talking like this, I think that's great too. But this is leadership. I believe she wanted to get to the priority of this past World Cup team where it became politics over soccer as opposed to competition and winning. That team was taken hostage by a few players. You know it. They were highly self-serving. They were selfish and people saw it. And I don't care if they have their minions of followers. They're following a person. They're not looking out for the greater good of all. And I thought that's the way we're supposed to be as human beings. So Lindsey Horan, by the way, to put everything in context that she said, okay, and we're going to get to that. Understand this. She went to PSG at 18. So she's in France. She's in a soccer culture where that's priority. French attention to football culture. That's where she is. Her judgment of her game was based on tactics, performance. That's what you're judged on in a soccer country like that. Quote, she said now about the national team, we need more ways to win. Listen, 8 years ago, I know I was on the radio. I know other people were saying this. Maybe more. We warned of this. The rest of the world was going to catch up to the U.S. women's national team. You aren't just going to win by being the most competitive, dominant, physically strong team anymore. Once these great soccer cultures decided to get into the game, invest, and compete, got to finish this. We knew they would catch up with the U.S. So Brazil, Netherlands, Germany early on, Portugal, Spain, and on more investment, knowledge, I mean, the investment into the game, that takes them to the next level. So I'm going to finish this quickly because we are on a hard break, but I want you to listen carefully to this part. I found it funny that the article in The Athletic had someone write it telling us after the fact what Lindsey Horan may or may not have meant. They put out another article after. It was the stupidest thing ever. And I love The Athletic, don't get me wrong. Others pulled the article to make an attack on fans and making an attack on fans. Could women's national team fans be spoiled? She said U.S. soccer fans aren't smart. But in the context of, by the way, if U.S. soccer players say they are under the microscope, isn't that what you want? You want to be under the microscope. You want pressure. NWSL teams are dying for healthy pressure to grow the game and get people to buy tickets and come support them and up the kitty. So here's the key piece right here. Lindsey Horan brought it up that many viewers will take what a television commentator says with analysis at face value. She said, quote, and here's where the context comes in, instead of just taking a sentence and say, American soccer fans don't know the game. She said, quote, American soccer fans, most of them, she says, are smart. She says, they don't know the game, though. She goes on to that. They don't know the game. They don't understand, but it's getting better and better. I'm going to piss off some people, but the game is in the United States not knowledgeable. People are more and more knowledgeable. There's a balance. But so much of the time, people take commentators at face value, everything that she says. So she gives an example of her mother, and she says her mother, you know, says it like this. She breaks into laughter. She says, my mom says Julie Foudy said you had a great game. And I'm here just going, I was blankety blank, meaning not very good, right? Quote, this is her again. From what I've heard, people understand my game more in France. A sense of my football, the way I play, she says. It is the French culture. Everyone watches football. People know football. Don't get butthurt by what Lindsey Horan said. I would say, look at that and say, this is a leader. This is someone who wants to tip the scale back to soccer being the priority. She said about the World Cup team, quote, you couldn't understand what it was like to be on that team. Priorities. I want professionalism. And then she went on to talk about the NWSL and the pre-match photos and the goofing around and the silliness. Maybe that's what American fans want. I don't know. But she said even her European teammates have been critical of that. They think it's strange to watch players joking around. Horan then said, we need to get back to football. And the author of the article never did ask the very important question of why football was not prioritized. That was avoided. And we all know it was politics and indulgent individuals. Why the national team was allowed to be injected with the poison of politics, I'll never know. It's sad because we love that national team, no matter who played for it, as long as they gave 100%. We'll take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5 on the Daspit Law Firm. All right, here's my ode to the blue card. This is Blue Monday by Foreigner.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
It's huge for the city, getting seven matches. Think about seven Super Bowl type events all happening in a short window of time. I don't think our city has ever hosted something this big. Yeah, you know, we've been waiting for years to get this schedule because now you really know what you're dealing with, and to have five of the first matches and then to go into the round of 32 and round of 16, that's pretty exciting for Houston, and we were really happy.
Great job, Janice Burke, Harris County Sports Authority. Seven games. Now we know what we got coming at us. That's great stuff. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they will handle your case. Hugh O'Connor's pub out on I-10 is in the Marquee Entertainment Center. I stopped in there yesterday, saw my pal David Roach. Great place to watch, well, any sporting events, but Liverpool games are always on there, Premier League games, you name it. They've got all the great British pub food. I think their British pub food is second to none in the city. Bangers and mash, you know, fish and chips, all the traditional stuff you get. It is Hugh O'Connor's pub. So get out there, and we're going to have Ian Veery from the Houston Liverpool supporters group on here in the near future. All right, let's go to the African Cup of Nations. A lot of great dramatic stuff, and I know a lot of people aren't watching it. That's prompted me to cover it even more because I just think it's remarkably interesting stuff. And from the perspective of, you know, a World Cup, this is the World Cup of basically Africa. So let's start with the host nation, Ivory Coast. The Elephants were on the brink of elimination in the group stage to now a crazy, remarkable path to get to the final. Ivory Coast defeats Congo 1-0. This is the goal from Sebastian Haller in the 65th minute.
I think if they get to the final, Radel hangs it back. Haller at the back post. Haller goal! Sebastian Haller. Cote d'Ivoire are in the lead.
Cote d'Ivoire. I love that calls. Haller goal. Nothing better than that. By the way, they went 1-2 in the group stage. At that point, they fired their coach. They didn't think they were advancing. The country's going nuts. They add a caretaker coach, Immerse Fay, who's a former player. All of a sudden, not advancing, and everybody, you know, ready to jump off the ledge, if not having already jumped off the ledge. Ghana collapses late in the game, and the Black Stars go out, and it allows the Ivory Coast to advance, and here we are. So now they're in the final. By the way, Sebastian Haller, the guy who scored the goal, interesting story. Born in France, his entire youth international career, he played with French at youth international levels and then switches to the Ivory Coast ultimately. And now he's a national hero for the moment. And they're one game away from winning it all. But the Super Eagles have grown into the tournament. Nigeria defeated South Africa on penalty kicks after a 1-1 draw. All right, so here, 67th minute, William Ekong, who, by the way, outstanding, 67th minute against South Africa from the penalty spot.
William Toast Ekong. Straight down the middle, and Nigeria lead. Stellar, sublime, soaring Super Eagles.
So they're trying to see it out, but guess what happens? South Africa, Teboho Mokoena, scores the equalizer. This comes literally in the 90th minute.
Teboho Mokoena to bring South Africa level from 12 yards out. Nwabali, potentially the Nigerian hero. In the 90th minute, Mokoena strikes firm, he strikes true, and he strikes through the heart of Nigeria, back on level terms in Bouake. It's 1-1 in the 90th minute.
So chances for both teams in the extra time. It goes on to penalty kicks, and guess who gets the winner? Kelechi Iheanacho, who used to be at Manchester City, now at Leicester City.
Kelechi Iheanacho, the rampant goal scorer for Nigeria and Leicester City's Foxes, from a couple of steps away against William, sends Nigeria into the final at the expense of South Africa. Staggering, stirring, stellar scenes from the Super Eagles. Iheanacho celebrates. It's the subs that have done the work, but Nwabali will be celebrated for his scintillating performance in goal. It's a soaring Super Eagles side that celebrates, and they march on to the final. They're one game away from claiming a fourth title.
Nwabali in goal was a beast. That's a great way to describe him, and he could very well be the difference in the final against the Ivory Coast. Here's a Nigerian coach who's Portuguese, Jose Pissarro.
The players are happy. They deserve. We deserve. The Nigerian people deserve. The Super Eagles deserve. Very good victory against a very good team. The best organization belongs to this team, in my opinion.
Why? Because they play together. Okay, play together many times. They create more problems for us than the other teams. They defend in down. They go more in. They push. They pressure. They manage the ball with quality. They have players with good quality. This team was difficult to beat them.
So both these teams now that are hitting the final are both teams that have grown into the tournament, are growing inches every single game they play. They're ascending. And it's all going to come together on Sunday. And if I don't know, if you don't have it, being sports is where you got to get it. And we got a lot of Nigerian soccer fans in Houston. I don't know how many we have from the Côte d'Ivoire, 713-780-3776, but we have a lot of Nigerian football fans in Houston. Incredible soccer community. So here's a couple of thoughts on Nigeria. William Trostekong, this guy, mature, what a leader, exceptional for the Super Eagles. Victor Osimhen had a moment in that game. Up to that point, had not done a whole lot. Had a moment where he eluded like three or four guys. He drew the penalty for their first goal. Lookman has been good, has scored a couple of goals for them. Like the commentator said, fourth African Nations Cup title for them potentially on Sunday. But this tournament brings so much of an element of surprise, of the unknown, of a little bit, and I use this a lot, an off-the-rails nature to way some of these games play out. Craziness, some of it. And it's refreshing because it is a little off the rails. And that makes it exciting. So, as always, Nigeria, now all the politicians come out, right? When you're winning and the cameras, all the politicians get out. They want their moment in front of the camera. They want to be next to the players. You know, these are national teams that people can get around a little bit easier than European national teams. So now you got all the politicians jumping in, and they're super proud of the Super Eagles. And, you know, they're all trying to boost their profile, right? I mean, that's what politicians and people do. And then you think about it and you go, boy, they have had so many corruption problems. This is the time to strike and get some things cemented to improve the professionalism of the Nigerian Football Federation, which ultimately is going to benefit the players. You know, extract some of this corruption and stupidity and treat the players more professionally, you know? Tell you another thing. People that have the opportunity to be dual citizens, you make it more professional, they may come back and play for Nigeria as opposed to a bigger country technically in Europe. And I say bigger from the standpoint of professionalism around their national teams. So I don't know. It's different. All right. Cade Cowell had a brace against Forge FC. They're from Canada, the Canadian Premier League. This is CONCACAF Champions League. Full time, it was 3-1. Here's Cowell, soundbite number 7, talking about the job not done and scoring his first goal for Chivas.
Obviously, very excited for the moment. Obviously, the job's not done yet. We have to come back and take care of one more game, but it was a good start. Definitely a huge relief. Happy to get it now. And it's such a big tournament. It's my first time playing this, so I'm very excited.
Fernando Gago has played him from the start. I mean, off the bench. So there's no, they're dropping him into the deep end, which I love. And I loved his comments, Cade Cowell, who comes from the San Jose Earthquakes to Chivas, about the fact that he wanted to be uncomfortable. There is not a single player that you watch, I don't believe, that hasn't gone through disappointment, uncomfortable pieces in soccer. And I guarantee you, when Mark Pulisic comes on, Christian Pulisic's father, in the next segment, he's going to talk about the ups and downs of becoming a professional soccer player. We see Christian paroling the fields at AC Milan. And, he's had ups and downs. Just like you don't get to that level without him. So we'll talk a little bit about that in the next segment. Then there was Marvin Fletis. This was pretty cool. Real Esteli. This is Nicaragua. Club America had to go to Nicaragua. 47th minute, Fletis scores.
Tiro de esquina, viaja este balón, segundo palo, remate, gol del Real Estelí.
So Real Esteli wins 2-1 against FC Televisa. Club America. Club America fans, I'm sorry. I apologize. Come on, we can have a little fun, can't we? People make fun of me all the time. So full-time 2-1. They're going back to Azteca. Now, there are people out there now throwing it out here. Oh, they could upset them in Azteca. Nah, ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen. Does happen, I'll drink two shots of tequila on the air here next week, which would probably make the second part of this show pretty good or pretty bad, one or the other. So there you go. So that's CONCACAF Champions Cup. Houston Dynamo remain down in Guadalajara. They're going to be making their way back here to Houston. Hard to believe their opening game is coming pretty soon. There's a lot of attention being paid to Sebas Ferreira now in the striker position. You're getting a lot of videos coming out of there, him scoring goals. It is preseason. I really like the fact that the Dynamo are trying to build him up, get him back to that position where he scored 13 goals. It's going to be fascinating, interesting. The unknown is right now Hector Herrera's health and Nelson Quiñones' health, who got injured playing with the under-23s, because we have the Olympics as well this summer. So there's so much going on here when it comes to what's happening. All right, Mark Pulisic, the father of Christian Pulisic. He's probably tired of being told. I'm going to give you his background when we come back before I get into the interview with him, because played collegiately, played professionally indoors, got an extensive coaching background. He's got a little similarities to me in that time period, although he's younger than me, that, you know, there were the different leagues, the USL, the ASL, there was these indoor leagues. He also went to Cosmos games, you know, at Giant Stadium, which, what's Giant Stadium called now? Anyway, that's where the World Cup final is going to be. MetLife, sorry. Free plug for MetLife. MetLife, if you'd like to sponsor this show, we're open to discussions. We can talk at 8 a.m. My people will call you. All right, 713-780-3776. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. Good friends at Cactus. I'm going to drop down there tomorrow, see my buddy Quinn. We got Rolling Stones coming April 28th. They're a great spot to get all your vinyl needs and CDs. Really cool store to go in. By the way, I'm going to tell Mark Pulisic this. I was in there, Guillermo, and saw a young guy with a Pulisic jersey on. And I stopped and talked with him, and he told me about how he loves Pulisic as the leader of the national team. Really cool stuff. All right, we'll take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. By the way, if you are watching and you see me in studio and you see this beautiful orange Soccer Matters T-shirt, well, you can purchase one for $20. All the proceeds to the 501c charity Snowdrop Foundation. Got some more news on that in the coming weeks as well. We'll take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Presented by the Daspit Law Firm.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. By the way, the World Tour for the Rolling Stones with two 80-year-old band members, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, opens in Houston. How about that? Talking about shining the light on us. Yeah, we have the World Cup in 2026. We got Copa America this summer. And you get the start of the tour where the eyes of the world will be on that first performance. Anyway, Soccer Matters brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713, call now. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You want the best. Nobody wants to get in an accident, but if you do, it's the Daspit Law Firm, and they've helped bring soccer onto the airwaves. Now, before I bring our guest on, I do want you to learn a little bit about his background so I can get this context for you. Mark Pulisic is the father of Christian Pulisic. Of course, everybody knows who he is. U.S. International, Dortmund, Chelsea, AC Milan in the Serie A, was just named the Player of the Month. Mark, his father, went to George Mason University, played under Gordon Bradley. Harrisburg Heat, indoor soccer professionally. He's done extensive coaching as well. Lebanon Valley, Harrisburg Islanders in the USL, Detroit Ignition, I believe he was the coach of the year there, Borussia Dortmund's Academy, Rochester Rhinos, Pittsburgh Riverhounds. He's tied very directly to Bob Lilly as well. So this is the context of the father of Christian, and I'm sure he's probably tired of being called the father of Christian. Actually, I don't think he is. Mark, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That's a pleasure.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure people knew about your connection and, you know, your lifelong love and commitment to the game of soccer, starting as a youth out on Long Island, leading up to a professional career and a coaching career. Maybe take us into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I always loved the game. My father introduced me to it growing up on Long Island, him being of Croatian descent. So just grew up playing the game, loved to play the game, and was fortunate enough to receive a scholarship at university and then continue professionally.
Kind of
those 10 years before MLS started in 96, so the indoor league was pretty big.
Well, having myself played in the ASL and the AISA and the USL, I can say I could not retire with my riches after my career. Could you?
No, I got you. You're right.
Well, anyway, let's talk about the fact that you get back into coaching. Before we get into Christian, and listen, you spent a lot of time coaching and working at the craft here and at a lot of different levels.
I did. I've taken some time off now recently, but always looking to try and get back into the game in some capacity. So, but yes, it's been a passion of mine. I spent my life coaching, did so overseas. So I got a good bit of experience and some great opportunities that I took advantage of, and it's been great.
You know, coaching, having run a youth club for 11 years, I always, even at this point, I say to myself, man, those were some of the greatest learning time periods for me, number one. But number two, I don't feel like anything I've ever been involved with since then has had the redeeming quality, right? When you see kids growing up and now they're coaching their kids, or they're a coach at Notre Dame or UConn, or they're playing in MLS. And just simply being a father, loving the sport.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have some great relationships with players still that I keep in touch with. And there's nothing quite like it. You know, being able to mold some young people into not only good players, but hopefully good people, and have some good lifelong relationships.
Cosmos, Giants Stadium. My gut is you and I were probably at the same games, but you might have been 8 years younger than me. But you may have been at those games as well. That was highly influential for us guys on the East Coast, huh?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I went to Giants Stadium all the time, and my family used to just pack up the station wagon and head out to East Gluckin for the almost the, you know, obviously a lot of the home games during the Cosmos existence there, and it's just a great out. I mean, we were very fortunate to see some of those players. It was just awesome.
Yeah, the fact that where we were, and the fact that not that many people got to see Pelé as consistently as we did. So I was on the team, the Pennsylvania Stoners, the greatest soccer name in the history of professional soccer in this country.
I remember it,
Okay, Keystone State for all of you out there, all right? We weren't all high when we played, but we played the Cosmos in a closed-door scrimmage, and I'm just going to quickly tell this because I think you'll laugh, because you mentioned Vladislav Bogicevic, the great Yugoslavian midfielder.
Yeah.
So we're walking out to play this, and I happen to be next to him in the tunnel, and I'm a rookie. And he's smoking a cigarette as we walk onto the tunnel. And right before we hit the artificial turf, he takes a big drag, and he flicks it back. And I'm kind of like, oh, this is going to be interesting. I think we lost.
Yeah, you won't see that anymore nowadays.
No, we lost 5-1. All right, let's get into Christian, because obviously your father, you've got exceptional work ethic, consistent training habits, passion for the game. This is passed on by father to son. Speak to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, geez, you know, I was my own player. Obviously, I'm a lot different than Christian is now. I grew up in a different time. So, you know, definitely had some influence on him, and you know, not only, you know, his ability with the ball, but just kind of molding him into the player, and you know, helping him just really enjoy the game and have a passion for it, and understand that if you want to be, you know, the best at something or to excel at the highest level at something, it's just going to take a tremendous amount of work and perseverance and sacrifice.
Was that there from the word go with Christian, or was there a time period you saw it just kind of crystallize?
No, it was always there. I mean, you know, he was young, you know, playing at 5, 6, 7 years old. You know, he just loved it, you know, and just wanted to win all the time. And, you know, if anything, he tried to pump the brakes a little bit and, mm-hmm. Make sure he enjoyed other sports and had other opportunities to go out and you know, we just wanted to expose him to other sports and other things in life, and made sure he did well in school, and you know, we just never really pushed soccer, even though my wife and I both played.
Mark Pulisic joining us here at Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. I think that's incredible what you just said there for people to listen to, right? Because it is an era of specialization, and it doesn't seem like it was 100% specialization as a youth player for Christian.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, you just have to work. You just have to make sure they're enjoying what they're doing, and you know, that's the most important thing. It's just you know, they knew that the player, that, you know, your child needs to be the one who decides they want to go out and knock the ball around and work on the game. And you know, it's difficult, you know, now with in this country, with there's so many opportunities, with so many things and so many choices these kids have now. So I think it's important you expose them to a lot of different things, and then they kind of find their own path and passion.
Mark, at what point do you look at your son and you go, okay, he's got something special here, we aim higher?
I mean, I don't think we ever wanted to aim higher. I think, you know, my wife and I saw him as a young athlete. And being able to run fast and have just natural gift of running and quickness and speed and agility. And, mm-hmm. you know, once we saw that combined with how much work he put in as a youngster with a ball at his feet, we definitely knew that he had something a bit special. And we just kind of helped to nurture that in any way we can, any way we could.
So what's the chronology getting to Dortmund? Because, you know, as we all know, the Bundesliga teams do like the American player. How does that all, you know, come to fruition? How does that happen? And then the next thing you know, he's at Dortmund.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was a lot of sacrifice. I mean, you know, he decided he had opportunities even younger, but at 15 going on 16, you know, we sat him down and told him that there was an opportunity. You know, he was scouted at basically U15, 14-15 U.S. national team tournament in Turkey, I believe it was. And they saw him, and they, you know, contacted us and said they'd love to have him in the academy. And, you know, I made sure that they knew that I would have to go along and that I was leaving my work. So there had to be you know, some smart financial decisions and that I had to make, and I had to discuss with the club, and they agreed to a lot of different things. And we said, look, you know, spoke with Christian and said, look, you know, this is an opportunity to enjoy it and just go out and you know, see how you you compare, and he just took it and ran with it. You know, it's we always told him if it doesn't work out, you know, so many opportunities elsewhere. Come back, go to college. You can have enough, you know, good education, move on, play professionally in the United States. And but playing in Europe was always something he, as a youngster, wanted to try. So we obviously supported him in that. And when he ended up going to Dortmund, he just took off, and coaches really helped him from the U17, U19, and then even before he got to U19, he was with the first team. So it just happened so quickly that he got his professional debut at 17.
Unbelievable. Mark Pulisic joining us. By the way, I've called a game in Dortmund. It's unbelievable fans. Mark, there was a point when you were staying over there that you said, okay, it's time for me to fly. It's time for me to kind of pull away from being in and around my son in Dortmund. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I stayed there, you know, obviously being 15, 16, and then once he turned 17, I left. And so I was there for about a good year and a half, 2 years. I think it was a full 2 years. And then, you know, he was playing regularly with the first team. He, you know, he's becoming a man. So it was time for him to sink or swim. And, you know, he needed to make decisions on his own, and whether they'd be correct decisions or decisions that he would, you know, maybe learn from in the, as he was moving along in the system there at Dortmund. And, yep, we thought it was time to let him go, and it happened to work out perfectly. It was good timing, and he continued to excel.
Yeah, I can only say this from an outsider standpoint. The way he carries himself is exceptional. I mean, the fact that he's the captain of the national team doesn't surprise me. Just the way he handles himself in interviews after running his tail off for 90 minutes and playing in highly emotional games, I just think it's phenomenal. It's such a great example. As I continue on, he goes to Chelsea, and, you know, like every pro athlete and everybody in life, there's some disappointment, there are challenges. Is there anything you can say about the time at Chelsea?
It was a great step, and, you know, it was, you know, it for me, those 4 years at Chelsea were just fantastic for him. He learned, he you know, did extremely well, and then he suffered a bit, you know, with some injuries and you know, continual changing of managers, and it just strengthened him as a player, as a human, and not everything went his way. And, you know, we always told him growing up, and, you know, it's going to be how you accept and how you deal with those challenges, those tough times, and how you can get through those, you know. A lot of players try and go overseas. Some succeed, some don't. It's not for everyone. But for sure, going to England and playing in the Premier League was just a massive step for him, and he took it. And, you know, ends up winning a Champions League, ends up winning Super Cup, Club World Cup. Okay. I mean, I don't think you could look at that, you know, first 2-3 years as anything but an unbelievable success. And, you know, especially that he had such a major role to play in all those, you know, trophies and, you know, Champions League run. I thought his form was very good, and he really was a big part of that run there for the Champions League. And then, you know, and then unfortunately they changed, you know, with the whole thing with, you know, Abramovich, and they, you know, the Russian-Ukraine thing, Abramovich ends up leaving, and you know, just unfortunately they brought in some owners that just weren't ready to accept or excel in the role that they took over.
So now, Mark, it's been so much fun to watch him at Milan. He's been the player of the month. He's consistently dangerous every game. I think there's a lot of new Milan fans in the United States. In fact, I ran into one in a record store the other day with the last name Pulisic on there, and I started talking to him, and he's a young guy, and he was just, he's just such a fan of Christian and what he does and how he plays the game. But Stefano Pioli, it seems to me, has really given him a tremendous amount of confidence as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, he went in there and, you know, like any good coach, you know, he looks at his, you know, what his strengths are and puts him in a position to, you know, to succeed, you know, by just trusting him and believing in him and, you know, allowing him to have a down day or a down training session, but believing in his ability to bounce back you know, and then with that confidence, obviously, you get from the coach and, you know, your willingness to try things and kind of bring out all your repertoire of what you can do and not feel so restricted has definitely helped him. So it's definitely been a good positive start.
Well, Mark, listen, we got to wrap it up. We're up on a hard break. Listen, I want to thank you very much for doing this, not only doing it live and coming on tonight on an evening where you might be doing something else. I already bothered you on the golf course, right? So we won't do that again. But listen, this was an exceptional interview. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. Mark Pulisic. Wow, that's some really interesting stuff from the father of Christian Pulisic. That's going to do it tonight for us. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Get it at Spotify, Google, Apple. That's where the podcasts are, or ESPN975.com. Differing content over at YouTube Soccer Matters. We're trying to boost our numbers of subscribers. And all you got to do is click. Come on, go over there. Do me a favor, right? Do us a favor. Because you know soccer matters. All right, until next Wednesday. We go Wednesday and Thursday next week. I'm Glenn Davis for Guillermo Lazo Romero, our producer. Remember, soccer matters.